are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
And I'll introduce you to her shortly, but I really want to thank you all for joining what I think is show 8 for us, which is super excited. Up to Me has been a great place and home for this show that we look to try to highlight the triumphs and challenges, the ebbs and flows of professionals pursuing purpose in their business and careers. Today is exciting because it allows me to share with you one of my favorite people, Erin Jones, and her story is tremendous with regard to how our paths have intertwined to get us here today and the opportunities we've had to work together in a range of capacities. But today we're going to unpack all of that and give you a privileged inside glimpse into the awesomeness that is Erin Jones that I get to see all the time. And my job today, which I think is an easy one, is to let you see that awesomeness. So Erin, thank you for coming to spend the morning with us.
You're too kind, Reggie. Thank you so much. Make me blush. thank you so much for having me today. I'm happy to talk about my purpose and talk about the experience that I had with finding my forte and with your crescendo. So I'm really happy to be here.
And I'm super elated. You are here as well. You braved the elements.
Yes, it was a little cold this morning.
Very cold.
Very, very cold this morning.
And, you know, it's amazing how thin our bloods have gotten now.
Even though I'm a northerner.
You are a Philly girl, right?
Yes. I left the snow and the cold at home.
Right.
I traded it in for spring in February.
Right. So. It is definitely, as Outkast will say, cooler than a polar bear's toenails.
Yes.
So outstanding. So Erin, while maybe what would help is give us a quick snapshot of how, like, what a day in the life of Erin Jones is in terms of the work that you're doing and you'll hear us echo a theme with Erin around lead and deliver. So, and she is living and breathing that calling every day. So, you know, what's going on in your world? Tell us a little bit more about what you're doing.
So professionally, my days are filled with they're still filled with intellectual challenges.
Oh, intellectual challenge.
Yes. but really, my day job is to monitor the performance of our technology organization with respect to resources.
Okay.
Right. So a lot of that, when I say intellectual challenge, a lot of that is building models or using Excel or using data visualization tools.
The stuff you love to do.
The stuff that I love to do.
And that's not sarcasm. I mean, we have to be careful because that sounds like sarcasm.
It's love.
She's actually... She's actually a glutton for punishment. Yeah. She loves that stuff that everyone else typically...
and so filled with trying to sift through data, trying to present data in a consistent way so that leaders are enabled to make decisions.
Okay.
That also helps me realize one of my other passions that we identified, which is really simplifying very complex ideas, right? So that usually involves bringing program governance to a structure within an organization. So, for example, how do we consistently report on forecasts about resources across the organization?
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
So that's sifting through data, that's understanding how each division does things differently, and it's getting them all to somehow agree to do it the same way.
Now, that in itself is fascinating, just because when you think about the scope and scale of Turner and the technologies that it is not only deploying, but keeping live in order to be able to do the amazingly dynamic, you know, functions from a business perspective they have to do every day. You are at the heartbeat, at the core of those technologies, making sure that they are properly resourced, that any changes that are occurring
trickle down or coordinated.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's we look at about 1,800 resources across the organization, and the projects that the teams are working on range from digital projects to team sites to your corporate infrastructure for your internal HR systems, financial systems, and also the way we sell our programming and ads.
Okay.
So it's this wide variety of applications and projects, which is something else that I love. I love that variety of being able to talk to somebody who's responsible for sports one day and somebody who's responsible for ads the other day, and understanding how their workload impacts how they deliver on an initiative that I'm leading for resources.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So because they have their own divisions, they have their own clients, they have their own workflow, but how can I work across those teams to still give, like I said earlier, to still give leadership that view so that they can make decisions. So it's the way that I look at it, and I try not to look at it from the overwhelming perspective. I try to look at it as a way to make everybody's life simpler and easier.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And that has really helped because you're building a framework instead of a process.
Right. That's what excites me about that today, and for as long as I've known this about you, is the incredible attention to detail and this almost, you know, glutton for punishment type.
Oh, God.
Thing you got going for you that, you know, stuff that other, that intimidates a lot of other people is really kind of the like, you don't like the project if it's not complex enough. I mean, it needs a certain level of, like, you turn on a video game and go immediately to the highest level. And so, you know, one, how long have you known that about yourself? And then two, have you been intentional in seeking those kinds of opportunities out?
So when I did the Find Your Forte program, you helped me look back on the projects that were the most meaningful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the word happy, but happy isn't really the word. It was when I was the most satisfied at work. It was when I would get back on the computer at night to do work, or when I'd go in on the weekends, or
most engaged. Most
thank
inspired.
You. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So there's two things. One, I like work that ebbs and flows. So I don't want to be on, I don't want to be a surgeon. I don't want to be on somebody's life is on the line all the time.
Right.
I need a little bit of ebb and flow, but if I don't have that ebb, I am not satisfied and my engagement drops.
Okay.
So you helped me really look back and say, where was I the most engaged? And there was a project that I wrote about. It was my first blog on leadanddeliver.com.
Okay.
It was a project that I was in consulting, and I was deployed to this project site to just do some enhancements to a system.
Mm-hmm.
But then, because I am able to develop individual relationships, I learned that nobody on the team was using the system. And to your point,
imagine
about
that.
Right. So here I am. So the client's paying me to improve something that nobody's using.
Right.
And at the time, I must have consulted with you at some point, but at the time, I didn't really know how to approach that, but I learned about myself that when you approach these things and you're honest, that you make the whole organization better, right? And
right,
so
right.
But that was one of the most engaged projects. So here I took this group of planners who themselves love their own Excel,
mm-hmm.
and helped them use this system that was going to make their life easier. And it was this complex project because it wasn't just a system implementation. It was also a change management initiative for how do I convince these planners to get off of the tool that they're used to using and to migrate to this new tool. How do I prove to them that it's better? How do I prove to them that it will save them money or it will help them realize financial goals? And then how do I help leadership understand that it's the right thing to do to invest in a longer term project and keep me on for a little bit longer so that we can make sure that the adoption stuck? And so, but it was all those moving parts and the idea that it wasn't just a plug and play that really had me engaged on that project. And I've had similar experiences since, but that was one of my favorite, one of the projects I look back on the most fondly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was that whole idea of turning around a failed project. And so, so when you and I met and you were helping, we were going through and identifying strengths and passions and where I was most satisfied and engaged. And that was one that came to mind. And I think during that time period, I was undergoing a change in my then current role at Turner. And was positioned for another very challenging role. It was a cross-functional, across the whole technology organization, and faced a lot of resistance from it, the organization's ability to change. But you helped me see that that's really what I love to do, right? And so I pulled back into my toolbox and started developing individual relationships and identifying, staying in the details, but raised up enough to help people see the common goal and where they were the same.
Right.
So to your second question, I think you helped me make opportunities or identify that if a project like that was around, that I do really well when I attach mm-hmm. myself to mm-hmm. those projects. And so here I was engaged,
right.
and then my CTO was getting a view of information that he'd been asking for
right.
about a year. So
right.
it was kind of, it was win-win.
Yeah, I think that was really fascinating, even now listen to it, but has always been the case when I listen to you talk about the work that you do. You always express it through the lens of the impact that you're having.
Yeah.
Like you hear things like users and lives easier and what were complex situations. And one of the reasons why that resonates with me so much is, and I'll say this is particularly, so this whole mantra that I've taken on to, get the world on purpose and with impact, sticks in place in some places better and not so easy in other places.
Yep.
And so I'm always in tune to places where it's not sticking because, I'm kind of like, gotta get this purpose thing, and people, I feel like our world is going to be so much better when it happens. Mm-hmm. One of the places that it does have a challenge sticking is like the more technologically complex environments are and that talent is, I get all kinds of naysaying around whether purpose is even a factor. And so when you talk about your work legacy,
mm-hmm.
and you look back in the wake of your career and the projects that you've hit, and you think of and you express this impact in terms of lives made better, or and somewhere there are people that you've got responsibility for resourcing this technology and its availability, and that there are people that are doing that, and they have lives that are better, and they likely have better at least the opportunity for better work balance. That's a really profound impact.
Yep.
And it's helpful to have you be clear on it and then express it in that way because it makes my job a little easier sharing that impact with others.
Yeah. And I see a shift. I absolutely agree with what you're talking about with technology. It's more of a, it's more important that somebody knows that this language or is familiar with this framework,
right?
Than
right.
they're passionate about that,
right?
Right?
Exactly.
But I'm actually, I see that more implicitly with leaders, right?
Say more.
When I see them looking to build teams, I see this idea of, well, yeah, they may know this language, but do they want to become deep in it, right? And so I think that is their really, that's their manifestation of passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that there is a shift, especially in technology, because there's the proliferation of, there are tons of coding schools, there are ways for you to get the skills, but is this what you want to do? And so I'm hoping to see a shift. The other thing that I'll say, just kind of selfishly, purposefully, is this program, which I did the program, what, is it 3 years ago at this point?
Two, maybe three years ago. Yeah.
But I still use the language when I am, if I have like a skip a level meeting with my VP.
Okay.
I still use the language to talk about what I'm passionate about or what keeps me engaged.
Wow.
Right. So, so the other thing that we identified was data. And we talked about that a little bit earlier. Is I can say, I can express that these are the things that I, that I'm passionate about and I want to grow in. And it helps leaders position, it's helped them position me for opportunities that, that may not have come my way. So, you know, just or additional projects. My world is much more project based.
You know, so, that's so important. And I hate to interrupt you. But well, the reason why is because, you know, when we go through this work and we get intentional about the most optimal place for you to be, you know, all too often people have been in cultures and workplaces where work just happens to them.
Yep.
Instead of them playing a more active role in bringing the type of work that they are, they feel called to do. They almost feel like that's, you know, that you're being selfish or that you're being greedy. And I'm so encouraged that you actively have that conversation and to hear you talk about, you know, skip a level, to have that conversation with leadership, because in a lot of way, a lot of times, I think one of the greatest challenges when I talk to leaders about getting on purpose in terms of the way they build their teams, the way they motivate their people, is so much about the individuals on their team that aligns with purpose and passions and gifts and motivations they're completely unaware of.
Yep.
And yes, you know, in Reggie's, you know, view of the world, you know, everybody would be armed with a forte, and that would be a discussion, you know, backdrop for a good conversation about the work. But the reality is they don't have that now.
Yep.
And so in the absence of that, it's really important for people to own that conversation, like not just and not be defeated, you know, in terms like just not assume this place of I'm just here to work, to show up and salute and sit down and code and fold up your, you know, portfolio and leave at the end of the day, to be an active and intentional participant in your career. We were talking about, shout out to Jen Hale, we were talking about before the show. I remember she used to say, your career is called yours for a reason, you know, and to the extent that you can own your career and actively, you know, engage leadership in the trajectory of your career, both that leader and you are happier.
Right. And that's, I was planned for, and these thoughts racing while you were saying that. Most of us are in groups where there is plenty of work. There's not a shortage of work
in most areas, right? Yep.
And so then it becomes, what do you prioritize? So then the organization has priorities, right? And then if we can build teams around passions that align to those priorities, then one, we get what the organization needs done, but then we get people who want to do it. So you talk about the work that nobody wants to do.
Right.
I'm in the middle of it right now.
Okay. Having a blast.
But trying to figure out, there's a model that we built to look at skills across our organization, and we're building it from the ground up, and it's just so simple yet so challenging at the same time. But it meets a need that our organization's been asking for,
okay.
And it also fuels me to the point where I was at work until 10:30 on Monday and early all this week on the week that we had daylight savings and
right.
everybody could barely get up.
Right.
So if we can match those, things up, then organizations still achieve their goals. And it's not that we're being selfish, but we're being to the word intentional.
Right.
And it's not that we still don't do the other things that just happen to us.
Right.
But I am happier to do those things.
Right.
If I just have a little bit of what I want.
And stuff that really gets you jazzed.
And I remember, I think that was another part of our conversation, was what is that mix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I overstate things for effect. But if it's 80-20, if you're doing 20% of the stuff that you love and 80% of the stuff that you don't, is that an okay mix for you?
Right.
And I think everybody has to identify what their mix is. But when we were talking and I mentioned trying to identify what that next engaging project was,
right.
I was very, my tank was very, very low. I felt like I was at a 90% of things that I didn't want to do. And I just needed to move the needle,
mm-hmm.
just like find another
mm-hmm.
project.
Mm-hmm.
To that point, we talked about what does our day look like. I added something to my portfolio. Intentionally, right? So I was approached about a leadership position on our African American affinity group.
Okay.
And it was in marketing and communications. And I said, I remember the person who asked me said, "Are you know marketing and communications? Is that something you're interested in?" And I went back and looked at my my strengths, my passion,
okay.
and I said, oh, okay, communication. I think I can, or it at least aligns a little
Score
bit.
For the strength finder.
And it just was, because they had other committees. They have outreach committee, and I love the kids. But it was one of those things where communication was more of what was going to drive
right,
me.
Right.
But it was the opportunity to build some other skills. We talked about, it gave me an opportunity to lead a team of about 15 designers and copywriters.
That was one
of the goals. And then it just gave me a different work environment. So it gave me a little bit of diversity in the teams that I was working with.
Right.
I was in a technology-centric world, and it allowed me to expand to work with people in finance and people in the brands and in the other strategy groups. So it was one of those things where I could identify an opportunity and say, okay, if I'm going to invest my time in this,
right,
does it align with what drives me? And so it has, and I've been on, I brought a co-lead on at the beginning of this year, and I have been on the team now for about a year and a half, and loving it. And loving it because it fits into the framework,
right?
It fits in the framework that you helped me define. And I knew that I love these things. I just didn't know why. And so I was able to add that to my portfolio. And then we talked a little bit earlier, said what are my days like? Less frequently, a little bit more frequently last year, but less frequently this year has been building my blog. Deliver.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, because ever since we talked about that as something that you wanted to get started,
yeah.
First of all, you had me at hello with how well, so I want to take a step back before we get to the blog and talk about where the blog came from.
Yes.
We went through the purpose discovery process
and
we got this clarion bell ringing around this big message that you feel called to lead and deliver complex projects. And you've already done a really great job of enumerating the impact in terms of users and lives and technologies that are the impact of them. But this notion of having this clear calling around lead and deliver, I found really profound. I know you.
I remember that aha moment.
I remember it too. I remember the excitement of it, nothing else. And then for that to kind of echo into, I'm going to start a blog, Reggie. And to, first of all, I was excited and surprised that leadanddeliver.com was even available.
It was. I snatched
it up. And since that time, I have just, every time you put a post that I get to see it either pop on the, I'm one of the subscribers or on LinkedIn, I'm just like, man, like you're one of those clients that I worked with that we just kind of give a little drop of concentrate and you just spread it and you just took off with it. And the posts are so powerful. One, because I think what's exciting about it is, we've been doing this leading and delivering projects for years, decades now.
Yep.
We won't say how. Okay. But we all know that there's some really exciting stories, some anecdotes, some lessons learned that happen, on the front line that, if nothing else, are entertaining on one level, are fascinating, are teachable moments.
Right.
And the fact that you capture those and share them in a way that people can appreciate them, what would work, normally feel like a work thing that you bring a new angle of insight to them. I love your blog.
Yep.
I absolutely love your blog. And so
I remember Storyworthy. I remember when we started talking about, we said, why do you love these complex projects? And I said, because you always have a story out there.
Right, right.
And, storytelling is the new buzzword,
or everybody's
trying to bring storytelling into their.
You were storytelling before it was storytelling.
what Lead Deliver allowed me to do was to put thought and to frame experiences in a way that I think others could benefit, right? And so a lot of times the blogs on Storyworthy mimic real life conversations that I've had or nuggets of a conversation that I've had, and I just blow it up a little bit more, flesh it out.
But
it allowed me to tell stories, to tell the turnaround story, and it's what I really like. And what I continue to like about Lead Deliver is that I am purposeful about it. I think in the first year I had a goal of publishing maybe every other month. So I had a goal of building up some content, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had this backlog of stories that I wanted to share.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, I'll tell a story when it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I can frame it around my project program management experience. I can frame it around leading complex initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
I can frame it around professional development in the I would say professional development in the program management space, but probably professional development in general. And so I really liked being able to do that. And one of the posts that I liked the most was called Managing Distractors.
That was one of the early ones, right?
It was, and you and I had a in real life conversation,
right.
And we had a and we also had an online conversation
about it.
But the reason I liked that post was because it was a real experience that I shared with someone on my team at the time, and helping them understand how to let the room talk or let the room reveal itself, but to also keep the room on focus, right? And so it was this, it was real life advice that I provided to someone based off of an experience or a series of experiences that I've had leading the dozens of meetings that we lead during the day. In my line of work, facilitation is often taken for granted, right? They know how to facilitate. And so what I was doing is I feel like I'm giving people a little bit of the nuggets of where I feel like I've been successful in facilitation or project management.
You are. What I'm reminded of is, and for our listeners, I'll give a shout out to your boss, Stacey Rivers.
Yes.
I remember she and I had a really deliberate conversation about the art and science of project management.
Yep.
And this is one of those things that's really very much part of the art. It's kind of how you're genetically wired around managing distractions and how, while it won't necessarily be something that's on a P PMP certification, you know, exam about. It absolutely is something that will drive the success of your ability to deliver a project. It's something that you're wired, and when you don't see it in a project manager that's trying to deliver a project and they're navigating through meetings and they do a poor job of managing distraction, you're able to see the impact. And so you kind of just want to give them a copy of the blog post, you know what I mean? Like, here, just take this. But no, it's great that you get it and that you share that. It's one of the things that is generally taken for granted, but it is definitely story worthy. Yep. So I'm glad that you do. And I personally feel like it is what makes up the uniqueness of Erin Jones and why this, you know, this calling around lead and deliver is so profound. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you. As soon as we had this discussion, I went home that weekend and snatched up the domain. I said, it's available.
Yes.
I was just, I'm so excited. And I started, started plotting out what topics I wanted to write on. I still have a backlog of topics. I just recently released a post about, interesting versus useful, which I was actually channeling some advice that somebody else gave me, but applying it to some example that I've had in my life.
Okay.
Looking at all the data that we sift through
uh-huh.
and determining what is interesting versus what is useful.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
And it helps you separate the wheat from the chaff. It helps you build dashboards that aren't just that help people understand what they're supposed to do with this information.
Right.
And one of the reasons I was so inspired to publish that post is because data is becoming a part of all of our lives.
Absolutely.
And
even more profound, more of it, bigger usages.
How do you, and so we used to have, and we still do, have very, very smart data scientists who validate data and who manipulate it and query it and, you know, do transformations with
it.
But a lot of us are expected to just to look at a set of data and to determine our trends and see if our operation is efficient or not efficient or if we need more resources. So how do we more and more I think we are being asked to look at our own data, identify our own metrics. And so I just was hoping that it would have a broader application, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to share that.
Well, I appreciate it. Absolutely. And, you know, given that you're not really the self-promotion type, I'll do it for you, but I would encourage anyone that's listening and that wants to get a glimpse into the world of Erin Jones, definitely check out her blog, leadanddeliver.com. We're celebrating the fact that it was available and she snatched it up and she's making good use of it. But you know, we're going to take, a little break and, you know, give listeners a chance to grab a breath and maybe grab a cup of coffee while we listen in to our sponsor for the show. But for now, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we will get a bit aspirational and looking at the emerging world. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you the opportunity to share your perspective on the world that we're coming into that's going to be more purposeful.
Yep.
So we'll be back after a short break.
Awesome.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels, and so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up2magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Okay, we are back. And what I am really excited about, the conversation that we're about to have, and hopefully the transition feels smooth, but I really, and over the next three shows, I've been intentional about the various people that will be our guests to represent 360 degrees of a perspective that I really want to try to bring to the surface. And that is, I feel like we're moving into a world where purpose is not just going to be a nice to have, something for someone to make a priority and go through, you know, invest in themselves and, you know, go through an experience like the one, like the Finding Your Forte program. and then get really intentional, I feel like that's going to become less of the exception and more standard. You know, at least I'm hopeful that it will become. Yes, somewhat selfishly, but bigger than that, the reason why I've kind of taken up this mantra of getting the world on purpose is for the macro benefits to our world in terms of everyone operating in the lane, doing the work that they feel called to do, to the extent that you're courageous enough to declare it and be intentional, have conversations with the right leaders. But it's going to introduce a whole new set of cultures and realities in terms of the way we work. And so,
yeah,
given that you've had your own experience, I want you to, for this conversation, project forward to this new world where everyone is, you are not just the exception of the person that's had this and kind of pulls this forte out and uses it for conversations, but everyone is.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about, you know, what you just, and you can just kind of open-ended share. You know, what does that world look like to you? Like, what are the merits of it? What are the challenges of it? Like, anything you want to share in terms of, you know, as you put on your futurist lens, what do you see coming from a world that like that?
So, I have to start off to say that it's inevitable that the world's coming into this. And certainly with the work that you're doing, but the, coming from Generation X, we have a little bit of this, we have this kind of split personalities, right?
Okay.
So I think we have our parents' desire for security,
mm-hmm.
but we also know that we're not going to stay, we don't have the loyalty, the organization loyalty, right?
Right.
And so we have to define who we are, where we are.
Right. Right.
And to that point, to tee off of the last segment a little bit, I was leading and delivering while I was at Accenture. I was leading and delivering while I was at Exervio. I was leading and delivering while I was at Turner.
Right.
So that
right.
is the brand that I bring with me.
It's been a common
right?
thing.
Right. But I can do it with passion and purpose for Turner.
Right.
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 I think that organizations are moving towards this, right? And what does it look like? I think we're having a hard time figuring out how it looks like in the organizational structures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does a PQ, what does a job description look
right,
like?
Right.
How do I source when I'm sourcing for passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think once people, but I actually think that companies are starting to source on culture.
I was going to say that
right?
because I would say, like, I've even noticed there's a
yep.
little micro trend
yep.
happening. Even with job descriptions,
yep.
you'll see words that formerly were emotion or touchy-feely
yep.
are showing up in job descriptions. Now you'll say, we're looking for someone who loves to do this,
right.
XYZ, and of course I cheer when
yep.
I see
yep.
that.
Yep.
Or we're looking for someone who's really passionate about this. Or you'll see someone when they talk about it, bringing an inspired presence.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that there are definitely some, you know, again, you know, micro trends happening
yep.
in terms of the way people are attracting talent
yep.
To their teams.
So people are building these organizations based off of traits, culture, passion, right?
Right.
And so then once you're there and they say, we know you're a good fit,
mm-hmm.
then we're in these, and especially talking from a technology background, we're in these matrix
mm-hmm.
organizations
mm-hmm.
where we're building teams to solve a problem. We're building teams to bring a new product to life. And so I think that there is an opportunity once people are brought into the culture, right, or brought into the organization,
mm-hmm.
to then align them where they're going to deliver at their highest capability, at their highest level of engagement.
Okay. That's so powerful, at their highest level of capability.
And
you
see it where, so then this is the business operations side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a hard time measuring it. And that is one of our, do you know what I mean?
I completely
and,
agree.
But we can measure it in productivity. We can measure it on, and so I'll go back to my product. You can, are we meeting deadlines? Are we delivering on budget? And when we see that happening, and we see a higher level of engagement because people are staying to make sure that we meet timelines, or checking their work three times, so that when we migrate the code, it works, right? So
yep.
So that level of engagement, we do see the benefits. I think we've had challenges so far measuring it.
You know what's interesting, and I am immediately reminded of at least the macro levels that it's currently being measured that I feel like will need to trickle into organizations. Mm-hmm. So, for example, whenever I'm talking to a leader or an organization about the business case for purpose, one of the first things that comes to mind is the engagement statistics that come out of the Gallup research around that says roughly a third of the workforce is highly engaged, shows up for work in a very inspired way. Another third are functional, but they really are disengaged, and for the most part, they're just there to collect a check. And then the final third are actively disengaged, are working against the best efforts of the other, two-thirds, and are really looking for the next thing to be done. And so, that's a sobering reality that the first thing that kicks in is a denial when organizations look at that and go, oh, well, we don't have that going on. But the reality is these averages don't happen, just because, so even if you make some adjustments for my place is better, you still are sitting on something that is a challenge that you need to work through. But there's another statistic that when I was gathering, the stuff to use for people to be able to make a case for purpose, around, and this comes out of the chaos resource around how successful projects are. And interestingly enough, coincidentally enough, a third of projects are delivered on time, on budget, with the quality that they were set out to be. Another third were delivered with challenges to one of those three things, and then another third of failures. Now, when I saw that, I thought, that's not coincidental.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? That is an absolute direct correlation to, and these are completely separate organizations that I bet you, I feel somewhat by myself in this, have never connected these two results to mean something to each other. But I've always felt like they are that way. And so to the extent that organizations and leaders feel like this level of engagement on your team is a touchy-feely thing, but you got projects that aren't delivering successfully, then you're missing an opportunity. Excuse me. And so I really feel like that macro measurement needs to work its way into organizations. And so leaders need to be able to ask themselves, what does my team look like?
Right.
And there's ways that you can use Gallup's tools to figure that out, like for your team. And some workforces have done that. Or like leaders need to be able to say, what does it look like in terms of the success of projects being delivered? Where am I on this a third, layout? Do you feel like that is something that will be adopted as a way to measure success of organizations, or will the apathy of just kind of current challenges continue and people just, organizations just continue to slug it out and deliver projects as best they can and be okay with the mediocrity?
Yeah, I think there's no way that companies can be okay with mediocrity. There's just, in general, most industries have too much competition.
Right.
You can have a startup that just wipes you out.
Right.
So I don't think companies will become complacent. I think that what they will do is they will tailor the way they work to increase levels of engagement. But my But I think the way they measure it will still be related in financial terms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they'll inject. I think they already are injecting purpose into the way they build teams, right?
Okay.
So one of the things I've seen is you have teams and you say, okay, we're going to put rock stars on this team.
Right.
And organizations have rock stars, high performers, right? But to put the high performers on that team who are engaged or passionate about that particular product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And especially when we talk in technology and we talk more about product development and more about being engaged with how clients, users, integrators are going to interface with that product. Put an NBA fan on that NBA product.
Right.
If someone is watching, so in my Turner, if someone's more engaged with your entertainment content, you know, maybe they're great in that function, but just not passionate about that domain.
You know, and I think that's a really powerful and compelling mantra to invite leaders to do.
Yep.
Because it involves a heightened level of complexity in terms of resourcing.
Yes.
It gives you another thing
dimension,
to think about,
right?
It gives you, you're already having to balance cost and availability and, you know, the putting the best folks on projects. But now you want me to add this new, you know, what are they passionate about?
Yep.
You want me to add a check mark on their HR profile that they're an NBA fan?
Right.
Is that how you want me to measure this, Aaron?
Right.
Like, so there's this whole new thing, you want you to consider. You know, and it's as if you're offering, I would say, that yes, and it's worth it to get the extra level of engagement that will drive you to have more projects delivered successfully because you have not only a highly capable technologist that also is an NBA fan, you know.
And so when you ask about where do you see this going, so I see more of that. I see more of that happening. So, the example that I just gave, I see that happening on like small percentage numbers,
mm-hmm.
right? For
mm-hmm.
you know, for volume,
you
see that,
there.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But when that happens across the whole organization, I think that's when you really start to see one, the engagement spikes up, right? And then two, you get to see the impact of that. You get to change that 30-30-30 metric and move that needle.
Exactly.
To some degree, the 30% that's disengaged, perhaps they could be engaged in another domain.
I would agree. I mean, I often say that. Like, and you know, people look at this a third, and the immediate answer is, oh, Reggie, you're about to tell me to get rid of this bottom third and the next third possibly as well. In a lot of cases, there are things that you can do proactively to move people up the continuum.
Right.
And you're right. So there's somebody that's sitting down in that bottom third that has an, you know, NBA fan, you know, that all it takes is you staffing them on the right project, and you can move them from the bottom third to the top third, like that.
And it could be cost neutral.
And it could be cost neutral.
It could be
neutral,
doing
absolutely.
Their same function, but doing it in a different part of the business.
Right.
And their engagement spike.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, to that point, I think that's when the organization becomes that complex living being. Because it does depend on what those individual motivations are.
That's exactly right.
And of those folks in the different sections. But it really could be done. It would have this an amazing effect on morale,
mm-hmm.
on engagement.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that I think one of the challenges has been that the conversation before was framed around happy. And that's what, when I said earlier,
mm-hmm.
Happy is this weird word. So in addition to the things that we talked about earlier, I've got two small kids. So, and so they say, I'm not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And happiness is one, it can be fleeting.
Right.
But it's like, And not only that, but you can't expect someone else to make you happy.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so the idea that you're, the idea that this before was framed in employee morale,
mm-hmm.
that's the way this
mm-hmm.
conversation was framed before.
Right.
But I think that there has been a fundamental shift where it's no longer morale and it's more employee engagement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And
absolutely.
So I think that is promising because I think that we've only just scratched the surface with that.
I completely agree with you. And I feel like, you know, there's this really good talk that I encourage, and you, it might have been on your list as well. I encourage clients to listen to before we even start this process
yep.
to watch this talk around happiness is the new productivity.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep, yep, yep.
And I think it's really powerful and compelling message that gets happy to be less of a weird word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it also is responsible from a leadership and organization responsibility not to follow, like, you don't want to over engineer. You don't want to, you know, all of a sudden follow fleeting,
yep.
you know, things that people say there that make them happy.
Right.
Do you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
And which is why going through the Forte process really validates these passions,
yep.
not just as interests yep. or hobbies, but they are
right.
things that, as close as possible, have been clinically diagnosed,
yep. Yep, yep, yep.
you know, as passions. And when we say passions, we don't mean just passions like they make you happy,
right.
but passions like there is a track record of this particular thing where I have invested work in it. I love it so much. That's how much I love it. And it is one of a handful of things that should be optimized in terms of working towards purpose for me. And that's one of the other mistakes people make
yep.
is, you know, there is all kinds of inspirational messages out. Follow your passions. And my thought is, if you go just following passions,
oh,
you're
gosh.
Gonna you,
yeah,
you there's
like
no
following,
telling
like,
where you'll be.
Like going to the dog park and just
right.
puppies all day.
Right, right. And then taking home
right, right.
the one that was the happiest.
Right, right, right.
We
yeah,
know
that, yeah,
is
that
not the
fun.
Full.
No.
Everything that you should look at. So it's really important for it to be one of the things
yep.
and that for you to qualify it. The more you qualify it, the more conviction you can have having conversations with leadership
right.
about this is a passion I'm really interested in tapping
yep.
into further. How do we make this happen?
Yep. Yep.
You know, so I really do feel like the echo effect of people having that conversations
yep.
and being empowered to do so, having organizations that invest in that conversation and pulling that out of it and feeding it into how they manage, how they perform in their role,
right.
how they work towards their career trajectory is all around goodness
yep.
in terms of the company being more successful because
yep.
they've got people that are more dialed into and inspired in their work and all new levels
right.
of engagement. I mean, I think about, you know, and one thing that is, I feel like is really sobering but a helpful exercise is to look at people that, so any leader, just kind of take yourself through this exercise. Think about somebody that left your organization a year ago.
Yep.
Now, think about them, and you probably know them in most
yep.
cases. Think about what they're doing now.
Yep.
So in a lot of cases, they, you know, people will leave to go do something that they, you know, they may be optimizing some passion or
mm-hmm.
some gifts. You know, so in some cases, they'll be doing something that makes them happier. Now, when you look at what they're doing now at this other organization, ask yourself, what could you have done a little differently to give that passion and opportunity to breathe within your organization?
Yeah.
And then think about the, you know, avoidance of turnover,
mm-hmm.
the in, you know, professional
right.
services realm,
yeah.
the, you know, opportunity cost, the revenue. There's all kinds of financial metrics that occur because that person's not with your organization.
Yep.
They may even be a competitor,
yep. Yep.
you know, in a lot of cases they are. And it's until leaders and businesses ask and answer those tough questions, will they come out of this complacency and mediocrity, as you point, will not be acceptable. And they'll be able to thrive because they're tapping into the greater calling that is, you know, each of the people on their teams.
Yeah. So to that point, I've been really lucky in that I've had management structures who believed in aligning their team members with their purpose.
That's quite, right? That's quite a blessing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To that point, I also think about what risk did they take, right? Because here I am, I'm telling them what makes me, I'm telling them what is my lifeblood. I need a lifestyle balance. I need intellectual challenge,
mm-hmm.
right? These are my strengths. These are my gifts. And so for them to have the fortitude to be able to say, mm-hmm. I hear you. We may not have something like that right now.
Right.
And I think that is where some leaders get scared because if somebody comes to them and says, this is what I want,
right.
they don't know if they can give it to them, right? And they don't have that courage to be able to say, I hear you. And if or when something like that comes down the pike, because then you have the avoidance of people just jumping ship. Because I do think, we all have anecdotes where you've seen someone, you know that they've expressed what they want, and their leadership isn't really able to do anything with that. Now, part of that is language, right? And one of the things the program helped me do, and this is where I don't know how it looks with the whole organization's on purpose, but for me to go and say, I want a promotion, right? That could have been the conversation,
mm-hmm.
but that really wasn't what it was.
That really wasn't. Yeah, absolutely. Right? There's something beyond that.
There was something
right?
beyond that.
Yeah.
And it was, I want more responsibility. I want to very
bigger yeah.
impact,
yeah. Yeah.
right?
Right.
And you know, maybe would I like that to be a tied with financial gain?
Right.
Maybe, but this is really what I want.
Right.
When we go and we just ask for promotions, we're not really equipped to tell the organization how we want to contribute.
Exactly. And I think there's so, I mean, you had to chomp it at a bit to get in there because there's so much I feel like we got to, you know, take and tag,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, even given our time constraints, maybe even deal with later. But I want to pull away a really meaty tidbit from what you shared, and that is having the courage to lead on purpose is a really compelling thing because, frankly, and when I think about the collection of these individualized conversations
yep.
that I have the
yep.
opportunity to, I often walk away with, man, if I could just sit down with their boss
right.
and tell them stuff they right. don't know that they haven't taken the time to ask
yep.
About the people in the organization and how, you know, in a lot of cases, it feels like leaders are trying to buy loyalty or throw money at challenges or at talent issues.
Yep.
And it's in a lot of cases, it's so much more simple than that.
Yep.
And first of all, to your point, just a simple acknowledgement, just having particularly high performing and high potential talent be acknowledged that or be invited to a conversation to say, you know, I get who you are and I get the things that get you jazzed. And I get the work that where you're headed in your career. I'm very aware of those
yep.
things. And I want this to be an evolving conversation, not just one we're
yep.
having today. And your commitment for me as a leader is to help you make traction
right.
on that career,
right.
on that path.
Right.
So,
right.
Aaron, we got to leave it there. And then I know that we could have this conversation
Good.
For a while.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll try to figure out how to. But this has been really
awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this. This whole second half of the conversation is a new thing. I want to continue it. So, you know, you stay tuned for the next
awesome.
Couple of segments
yeah.
Where we will have a leadership development consultant
yeah.
and HR talent development
okay.
professional practitioner
yep.
To share their perspectives on it as well. That should be pretty,
yeah, that'd
pretty
be awesome.
Insightful, I know,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Right. So with that, we will bring to close our show today. We're going to close out, and we invite you to stay with us just for a couple more minutes and listen to the great song that we've been fortunate enough to have as our show song, Free Your Dreams by Shante Khan. And definitely follow the link on the show if you're using the Up to Me link to go and track the song down and download it. It's a great song, and we're excited that they've allowed us to use it. There's also big news on the Up to Me front. We're excited for this to be our home. Up to Me was just authorized and approved to join Google's Play Music streaming, and so now we're just podcast before. We'll now also be available in Google. So that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's big news
good.
For all of Up to Me's shows. So we're excited about that, and we look forward to continuing this conversation this time next week. Until then, we invite everyone to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Have a prosperous day, everyone.
I'm counting all my blessings.